It is officially official. It happened yesterday. You can exhale. DeAndre Jordan is a Maverick. He signed on the line 1 year, $22.9 million. It is official. No backing out, no locked in the room with the chair up against the door, none of that. DeAndre Jordan will be in a Mavs jersey on the court next fall. And it's interesting, too, because his opt-in amount in L.A. was 24.1. So the Mavs got him for $1.2 million less. But because there's no state income tax here, Jordan will actually make more off of the $22.9 million here than he would have off the $24.1 million in California.
Seems like we've been selling free agents across all sports on that tax idea, and it's never worked. And I don't know that that's necessarily, that it really has any bearing on what's going on here. Nothing says official with the signing, though, like DeAndre Jordan tweeting the smiley face with the Cowboys hat.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
And then owner Mark Cuban quote tweeting that with three yellow thumbs up emojis, hashtag MFFL. So I guess that's how we do business these days. There's no more
on Twitter
signing contracts. It's just, you just do emojis on Twitter, and everyone knows that that means it's official.
Man, I feel like that's the world in a nutshell that we're heading towards, where we go back to almost Egyptian hieroglyphic communication, and we stop using actual sentences, and it's just a bunch of emojis and signs.
At some point, all of this technology is going to be cyclical, and we're going to start going backwards. I'm confident in it. I'm banking on that happening.
I don't know. We'll see. So DeAndre Jordan is coming into the fold, and this is one of those. We had these conversations last week, and there was still, I think, some group of Mavs fans out there that was still waiting for this to actually be official. Still wondering, is DeAndre truly going to go through it this time, despite everything that happened on Twitter? Reality of it is, with what happened previously, you don't know until that contract is signed. So now he's here, and we have to decide how to accept him into Dallas, finally. And I'll be curious to see that first night when game number one comes around at the American Airlines Center, how the home crowd treats him. Is it going to be completely forgotten? Will there be a small pattering of boos, perhaps, just once or twice, just to let him know, hey, not cool? Or is there just going to be a loud eruption of glad we finally were able to bring you in?
I think it's going to be more on that side.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that.
Because at this point, what's the point of holding the grudge? He's here.
I don't know. Ask the mob.
He's here for 1 year. I don't think there's going to be any type of mob ties, any mob mentality going on here. It's win-win for the organization. If something tragic happens over the course of the year where there's multiple injuries, where they end up absolutely bottoming out, then they are going to keep that pick. I would say that that's highly, highly unlikely that the Mavericks are going to be picking in the top five this next season. It would have to be catastrophic. They were intentionally trying to lose this last year,
yeah. And
it was incredibly painful. I don't think they want to be anywhere close to that this next year. There's not much of an incentive in order for them to be really bad this year. There's not an incentive for DeAndre Jordan to not do everything he can to maximize his 1 year in Dallas. It's setting up to be a monster offseason next year where he has enough talent, where he is going to get serious offers, and he's going to look very good playing in Rick Carlisle's offense. He's going to look really good on the defensive end compared to everything that the Mavericks are not on defense. They are a terrible defensive team. He instantly adds a legitimate piece on that end, and he's going to be able to roll to the basket. He's got a couple of guys in Doncic and Dennis Smith that are going to be very good at lobbing him the ball inside, that are going to be taking a lot of attention on pick and rolls. It's a win-win scenario, no matter what you think of DeAndre Jordan as a person.
Yeah, next season's going to be fascinating to me because as good as the West was last year, barring injury, it's going to be much better this year. The bottom of the West is not going to have somebody playing as poorly. Really, like you just pointed out, Dallas admittedly tanking, purposely trying to lose games. Phoenix, to an extent as well. All these teams that were at the bottom last year, now I'm not talking they're all of a sudden going to jump up and make the playoffs, but they're going to win more games and be more competitive. It'll be very interesting to see. I don't know if there's going to be a 2021 win team that finishes in last in the West. I mean, you're seller in the West this year. You may have a lot of teams winning 30-plus games, and that takes away from teams that are above. Now, obviously, the precursor to that, like I said, is barring injury. You know one of these teams, a couple of stars are going to get hurt, and somebody's just going to fall on their face and end up crashing down to 24, 25 wins. But the depth night in and night out of playing in the Western Conference next year is going to be absolutely brutal.
Well, and the one thing that people aren't talking about is the change in the lottery rules that's coming this next offseason. The incentive to tank has been cut drastically, as your percentages, the worse you are not nearly as good at getting that top pick anymore. There is much less incentive moving forward and being really bad. I think that there is absolutely no coincidence that that coincides with the year to where the West is incredibly competitive, where the bottom teams are going to be looking at possibly the Clippers, depending on what ends up happening there. Sacramento, Memphis, Phoenix, and Dallas is in that bottom tier. And Phoenix, we just saw last night the debut of DeAndre Ayton. He's going to be pretty good. Devin Booker is pretty good. Josh Jackson, yeah, the former star out of Kansas, he cut his hair this offseason. There was a big note that they were pushing in during the broadcast that Josh Jackson really reapplied himself later in the season after they didn't feel that he was putting in enough work, and he has a chance to take a big step forward. So Phoenix can be quite a bit better this year, who they finished at the bottom of the West last year. If Memphis could stay healthy, then they'd be a much better team than they were last year. No chance that they do stay completely healthy, but the point is that the Mavericks, even getting better, are still going to be, as you said,
yeah, it's
just really fighting every night, and the East is going to make sure that they stay out of that bottom five because there are still some pretty bad teams there, but the incentive to lose just isn't there with the Mavericks in any way, and fans should be happy about that.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting because when you look at it, I mean, look at how competitive this was last year. You're looking at seeds 3 through 10 won 42 through 49 games. And you could have a couple of other teams. If we believe the Mavs can realistically get to, like, let's say 36, if you believe the Lakers with LeBron, they won 35 games last year. You got to think at minimum he's six games better. So that gets you to 41 in L.A. So then you're looking at, can Phoenix make a jump? I think Phoenix, and granted, we have to see, like you mentioned, Ayton needs to bulk up a little bit. We're talking about a guy coming into the NBA playing against grown men, a little different than what he experienced in college. But you got to think Phoenix is going to be a handful of wins, if not 9 to 10 wins better. That puts them at a 30-win floor.
They added Trevor Ariza, too. Don't forget,
yes,
where he is a winner. There's no question. They made a trade on draft night to get Mikal Bridges. He's going to slide in. He's not a one-and-done type. He's a guy that's played a couple of seasons, championship-level seasons, in college at Villanova. So they're getting better fast.
Yeah, and so when you look at all these teams in the West, and that's one of these conversations that really you have to have, I think, despite the idea that, yes, Doncic may end up, who knows, maybe he's Rookie of the Year. DeAndre Jordan comes in, let's call him. He has the season that he had last year. You're talking about a 12-15 guy. It's great. But at the end of the day, when you look through the Western Conference, whatever the Mavs are trying to build next year, who do you look at that's ahead of them and you say, okay, the Mavs are going to win, hell, let's call it 15 more games, get to 39 wins. Where are you taking those 15 wins off of at the teams ahead of them?
I mean, maybe you look at San Antonio with Tony Parker signing a two-year deal with Charlotte yesterday, kind of out of nowhere. Maybe that brings them down. But
the Mavs, let's say, pick up two wins extra against San Antonio.
That might be
Denver,
generous.
Denver's going to be better.
That might be generous. Denver's going to be better.
So
the Lakers are going to be better.
Right. I mean, when you look at this, and that's the difficulty of this, because we have to be realistic about this approach. Obviously, DeAndre Jordan comes in. He has the experience. He is what you believe he can be. Dennis Smith Jr. is still going to have growing pains next year. Luka Doncic sure as hell is going to have growing pains next year.
He's not going to play hardly at all. The thing is that they're going to be playing in China here, so they're going to have a shortened preseason. So he's not going to be facing necessarily top-tier competition moving in. He's going to play maybe one or two games here in summer league. He's not even officially with the team yet. He's not officially signed with the team yet. He's there in Vegas, but
right,
nothing is official there. So he's going to have to start the season and hit the ground running with a completely new squad. He's got experience playing with professionals, though, so you would imagine that the learning curve is going to be a little bit less for a guy like that. But again, nobody knows exactly what's going to happen. How quickly are people already writing off Trae Young because he's had a couple of bad
summer league
games? It's people's opinion on these guys can be swayed very quickly, and I think we underestimate how that can affect players as well. Whenever negative media attention, negative public attention, even if they say that they don't read Twitter, it's very clear that they do. If you spend any time in the Cowboys locker room after the game, a lot of those guys, the first thing they do is they answer their text messages, then they get on Twitter, they see what people are saying, they're looking around. It's human nature to be paying attention, and that's why, getting back to DeAndre Jordan a little bit, I wonder how apprehensive he is going around and seeing what people are saying right now. Maybe enough time has passed to where it's died down a bit, but there's definitely some hardcore Mavericks fans that are looking at this and wondering, why are we doing this for a guy that...
People like me that that hold a grudge and hate because we have that, we're inside the mob.
You do hold the grudge. Never forget. Like nobody's business. There's no question. You're a grudge holder.
It depends on what it is. Sometimes I like to pretend that I'm in the mob and hold a grudge, and then 15 years later I surprise you when you didn't expect it because you're living in San Diego, thought your life was safe, but it isn't.
Sounds kind of threatening. Who are you talking to right now? Why are you staring at me right now when you say that?
It's Matt McLaren. It's DJ Ringenberg.